think about the place you live or maybe a place you visit a lot. Is it a good place to go for a walk? Do you feel safe there as a pedestrian? Is there anywhere to walk to? Walkability has emerged as a big trend in renting and real estate. The National Association of Realtors said last year that demand for walkable neighbors is increasing and it's changing the home selling industry. But a lot of cities and towns today are not very walkable. Our next guest says there are lots of ways to change that. Jeff Speck is a city planner and the head of the planning firm Speck & Associates. He recently wrote a how-to guide for making places more walkable. His new book is called Walkable City Rules, 101 Steps to Making Better Places. Jeff, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hey, it's my pleasure, Rob. I'd be happy to talk about Turkey if you'd rather.
Well, maybe, if we have time at the end, for sure.
Okay.
But you spend a lot of your book talking about how to make cities and other communities more walkable. You start off talking about why, and let's start there. Why is it in our benefit to have more walkable communities?
Well, it's interesting as a city planner and as someone who argued for making places more walkable for many years, and my mentors before me, for mostly from a planning perspective and all the planning reasons and design reasons why it made sense to make places better designed, and seeing people not really caring all that much. And then what happened was about 15 years ago, there were these three other groups, the epidemiologists, the environmentalists, and the economists, who were all arguing from their playbooks about why we should be making more walkable places and getting a lot more traction, a lot more attention. In very brief, you know, the economics argument, There's a positive argument to be made about people, of course, paying more to be in more walkable places because they value them more. But the basic story of American development is that we, in 1970, we spent 10% of our income on transportation, and we just about doubled the number of roads in this country. And now we spend 20% of our income on transportation because we've tied ourselves to this extremely expensive way of getting around, which is, you know, dragging the car with us everywhere we go. The environmental argument is simple and easy. You know, the more we drive, the more we're contributing to climate change. And then the health argument, we have these doctors who are basically saying we need better planning because we've engineered out of existence the useful walk in our communities. And so people aren't getting the exercise they used to get. We have the first generation of kids in America who are expected to live shorter lives than their parents. And these doctors are saying it's because walking isn't something we do as a regular means of exercise every day just to get around. And there's a lot more depth to all those arguments, but those are three arguments that I highlight in my last book, which was called Walkable City. And since writing that, I've realized that there were two more, which are in this new book. And one is about community and how we find that in walkable places, community forms a lot more. You know your neighbors better. You participate more in community activities. And of course, the shorter your commute, the more you participate in clubs and sports and other things, pretty obviously. But the other is equity. And the story is kind of sad, but the people who are dying in car crashes the most, the people who are pedestrians who are being hit by cars the most, are definitely on the lower end of the spectrum. And people often talk about cycling, you know, even in a place like Madison, which is well known for its cycling, but they talk about cycling as being this elite thing, right, that's done by wealthier people. But in fact, the latest data shows that fully 39% of people who commute to work are from the lowest 25% of income earners. So there's a strong argument for improving your cycle network as well to support those who need more help.
When people think of city planning, they might think of a big city downtown, and that's part of your story. But you say we should be thinking about this in smaller communities and even suburban communities, areas we might think of as sprawl zones.
Well, the second to last of my 101 points in my book is don't give up on sprawl. And there's a lot to be said about how even the worst sprawl could be made a lot safer, or let's just say less deadly, by making the streets better designed than they currently are. But, you know, most Americans live near or in walking distance of some sort of town center or city center or main street or someplace where actually that walkable lifestyle is available to people who want to have it, if it's provided and if it's attainable. You know, I do most of my work in smaller cities, about the size of Madison or smaller, or bigger cities that aren't that well known for advanced, you know, planning. I work in Oklahoma City. I work in Davenport, Iowa. You know, I've worked near Madison. We could talk about that. But the, you know, these are the places where most Americans live. And if there's some little knuckle of what we call pre-war urbanism, if there's some part of your city which was built principally before the World Wars and has some traditional urbanism in it, a main street where the buildings are up against the sidewalk and not behind a parking lot, or, you know, smaller stores and not a Walmart, or at least away from the Walmart, then that's a place where you can, by reinforcing walkability, but also balancing the uses, by adding housing, which a lot of downtowns are doing, you can make a real 24/7 place where people actually have that urban lifestyle you might expect in a bigger city, in a smaller community. And frankly, a lot of people prefer that. You know, a lot of people don't want to be in the big city, but they want all the benefits of a you know, less car-dependent lifestyle.
Jeff Speck is with us. His new book is Walkable City Rules, 101 Steps to Making Better Places. A lot of your recommendations involve making walking feel and be safer. And a big part of it is, I mean, speed kills. Talk about the difference between if cars are driving 25, 30, 40 miles an hour in a place where you want people walking.
It's a real, you know, geometric relationship that increases dramatically with speed. So a car going 35 miles an hour is about seven times as likely to kill you as a car going 25 miles an hour. And this is the cusp at which cars are driving, right, in your city, in your more downtown areas or your more potentially walkable areas. So the question is, what can you do to cause drivers to choose to go a speed which is safer and actually just choose to obey the speed limit? And the problem is that for years in our communities, the highway engineers were applying highway engineering techniques to our downtowns, to our main streets. And this is a shocker often to people who aren't in the business, but it's normal to engineer a street for about 10 miles an hour over the posted speed. And the idea is that it's forgiving, right? That if a driver goes too fast, they won't crash on it. But of course, what that technique does is it causes people to speed. So, you know, I was working on a project in Alabama, and we were trying to make nice, calm streets. And the county engineer who was in charge said, oh, but you can't have that tight little curve, or you can't have that narrow street, because we have to engineer it for 40 miles an hour. I said, oh, but the speed limit's 25. He goes, yeah, but that's the speed which you have to engineer it for. There's this complete misunderstanding about the way that environment influences behavior in street design, and fortunately that's being changed right now. But most communities have been built around this confusion. And all the things that cause you to drive slower are the things that often the highway engineers mitigate against. So, of course, we want to have small blocks, lots of intersections. We want to have parallel parking, which slows cars down and protects the curb. We want to have two-way traffic and not one-way traffic. Street trees, which were once termed FHOs, fixed hazardous objects, have actually been determined to cause drivers to go more slowly when they're near the road. Narrower lanes, you know, there's lots of things that you can do to actually, and the Dutch did it about, you know, 15 years ago and caused the number of pedestrian deaths to drop like almost to zero by basically saying we're going to engineer an environment in which drivers make the choice to drive slower.
It seems like when we talk about pedestrian safety, it's all about managing the pedestrian, making sure they cross when they're supposed to cross, where they're supposed to cross, that kind of thing. It sounds like you're saying, no, we can design safety. We can build it into the driving side of the equation.
Well, thank you for saying that, because, I mean, there's also a ton of pedestrian blaming that happens, you know, and pedestrians being advised to wear bright clothing, you know, buckets by the side of the road in Salt Lake City where you take out a flag that you're supposed to wave as you cross the street so you won't be plowed down. You know, there's a lot of stuff that's done. You know, and then this whole campaign now against texting while walking, right? Which, of course, you know, I've walked into a lamppost once doing that. But the fact is that it's principally the driver's behavior and I would say the engineer's behavior that's leading to the dangerous circumstances in our communities. And what's frustrating is we know how to fix it, but it's a very uphill battle in many communities to get the local public works engineer to allow you to do that.
We're talking to Jeff Speck, author of the book Walkable City Rules, 101 Steps to Making Better Places. You can join in at 800-642-1234. When you look around, how walkable is the place you live? Is being able to get out and walk to someplace, any place important to you? Is it something you look for when you're looking for a place to visit or a place to live? What changes would you want to see in your local neighborhood or town? And what questions do you have for our guest? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation, maybe hear from you coming up on Central Time. So we continue our conversation about how to make communities more walkable. Jeff Speck is with us. His new book is Walkable City Rules, 101 Steps to Making Better Places. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Tell us how walkable your community is or isn't. What would you like to see change? What would you not like to see change based on what you've heard so far? Or do you have a question? Call in at 800-642-1234. To your calls now, Mary is with us in Stevens Point. Mary, hi.
Hi. I'm on the Common Council in Stevens Point, and we've got one urban planner on our Common Council and people who are highly educated about street design and bike ped issues. So we've done a lot. The county has a bike ped plan that the city adopted. Two of our residents wrote a TAP grant, so we've got a grant for restriping a large number of city streets. Right. We have a bike ped committee now that reports to Common Council, and we're instituting a 4-to-3 lane conversion on one heavily traveled 4-lane road. But I also want to tie this in with your previous guest. We've had a whole lot of very vocal community pushback against these efforts that make our streets better for everybody. Horrible social media comments, rage shown at city meetings, and it's been daunting. But we've got a supportive city staff, and the mayor is supportive of our efforts. So we're getting things done in Stevens Point. It's already flat, and now we're making it even better.
Mary, thanks a lot for the call. Jeff, your thoughts on hearing what Mary had to say in Stevens Point?
Well, it's what we call the bike lash, you know, when you try to add bicycle facilities and other stuff to a community or otherwise make it safer. And, it, you know, people, in my experience, it's not that hard to get to improve the pedestrian experience. But when you try to take any part of a roadway and recommit it to cycling, that's when you really get into the, you know, the different political stripes and people showing their worst side. I had a very funny experience. I was wondering if I would tell this story, but this is a perfect setup, which is that the last time I was on the radio in Madison, I was called on to be an expert because someone was considering a 4-to-3 conversion, which the caller mentioned, on a street heading north out of the city. This is what's called the classic American road diet, where you take a 4-lane road, which is inherently very dangerous and also very inefficient because the fast lane is also the turning lane, and you turn it into a 3-lane road. There's been many dozens of these done around the U.S., and they improve safety dramatically, you know, with a center turn lane that's shared, and they do not reduce the capacity of the street for cars. They handle just as many cars after as before. And what you can do with that extra 10 or 11 feet you get by eliminating a lane is put in 2 bike lanes or add parking or do something else. In this case, they were adding bike lanes. And the experience of these streets is that you know, they handle just as many cars as before. The merchants do just as well or usually better along the street. And I was asked to come on the air because a city councilor in Madison who also happened to own a restaurant on that street was the biggest opponent of the conversion. And so they asked me to opine on whether these 4-to-3 road diets worked. And I said, you know, I don't have an opinion. I have evidence. And I listed the evidence and I gave all the reasons that I just gave you and some more. And then they said, okay, and now for the counter opinion, let's speak to the city councilor. And he had hung up. So he had just stormed away from the telephone because he didn't hear what he wanted to hear. But, you know, there's a number of kind of easy, quick fixes that you can do. And the caller mentioned restriping, you know, which is so much cheaper than rebuilding a street. Just reallocate the pavement that you have in a way that makes people drive more safely. And I'm always looking for those streets in a community that aren't congested, you know, that have too many lanes, more lanes than they need. And that's a great opportunity to convert asphalt from driving or speeding into parking or into cycling or maybe into a parklet that broadens the sidewalk so you can do sidewalk dining or something like that.
Mary, thanks a lot for the call. We'll go next to Lisa in Janesville. Lisa, hi.
Hi. I am just wondering, after having lived in England for a few years and enjoying being able to walk anywhere that I wanted to in a city that I lived in that was about 25,000 people, now coming back to the U.S., and I really miss that, I'm wondering if you have looked at any of the designs of the layouts of the cities, which I know were built many, many years ago, but incorporating some of those designs into any cities currently in the U.S.
Well, I haven't switched any of the driving to the other side of the street to make it more British, but I think that there's a number of things that, let me just start over. The things that make British cities safer than most American cities have nothing to do with the historic nature. If you're looking at, older American cities versus British cities, if you're looking at newer American cities, you might as well compare them to places like Madison and Milwaukee or the older towns. The real distinction is new versus old. And what did the country do in the last 50 years? The difference between the U.S. and England isn't principally that they're older, but that their last 50 years of road design has been much more pedestrian and cycling oriented and much less automotive oriented. Simply around, for example, how wide the driving lanes are, which sounds like getting in the weeds, but it's super important because the lane width determines how fast people drive. How narrow the right of way is, whether there are street trees, and honestly, they haven't had the same destruction of their city centers from big box stores in England that we've had in the U.S. That's had a huge impact on the walkability of our smaller towns. They've had some, but not as much. So it's really not the historic nature of England that makes it a more walkable place. It's the mistakes that we've made over the past 50 years.
Lisa, thanks for the call at 800-642-1234. We're talking to Jeff Speck. His new book is Walkable City Rules, 101 Steps to Making Better Places. We heard from Chris in Horicon. Chris says he's a truck driver. He's worried about narrowing streets when he's delivering into these maybe more walkable pedestrian areas. The narrow streets, he says, make his job more difficult and unsafe. Is there a loss there for making streets narrower when businesses need these deliveries coming in?
Well, you need to make sure that the streets, and particularly the intersections, are designed so that the trucks that are using them can maneuver, unless it's the wrong truck. And there are some places where you need to put in rules about truck size. But in most of America, it's pretty large trucks. And you need to make sure they can maneuver. But actually, with due respect to Chris, I would say that the things that he thinks make his job more dangerous are actually causing him and everyone else to drive the proper speed. And tightening his roadway in a way that his truck still fits, but fits at 20 miles an hour and not comfortably at 30, is exactly what we need to do to make us safer while we make his job slightly harder. And that's a sacrifice I would ask him to make.
We've been focusing on safety. Let's talk about desirability and attractiveness. You have some suggestions. Some of your rules are things like you got a parking garage, don't have it fronting right up on the sidewalk, because who wants to walk block after block of parking garage? What sorts of things can we think about to make walking attractive?
So the word I use isn't attractive, because that kind of implies a certain subjective angle,
sure.
But I just say interesting. So people will only walk if the walk is useful, safe, comfortable, and interesting. Useful has to do with having different uses around you, so you're just not in a single-use subdivision, right? Safe, we talked about. Comfortable and interesting have to do with shaping street spaces so that they hold you nicely. We talk about outdoor living rooms when you're a planner, so having good edges and good spaces. But then are those spaces interesting? Do they show signs of human habitation or human presence? Or are they boring? Are they blank walls? Are they parking decks? That sort of thing. Now, if you go around the U.S., certain communities have rules, for example, about building a parking deck. Do you have to put retail on the ground floor of that parking deck and give it a higher ceiling so the retail works if you're in a retail area? That's a rule some cities have. Or a more versatile rule, do you have to set the parking deck back at least 20 feet from the sidewalk edge and then build something like housing between it and the street? And more cities, I wouldn't be surprised if it's happened in Madison, more and more cities like that I work in, like Des Moines, have one or several examples of massive parking decks that you can't even see from the sidewalk because there's a thin liner a residential building between it and the curb. And you can kind of judge a city by whether it has these, you know, if a city is of significant size and it doesn't have these rules, then it's not focused on the attractiveness of its public realm.
We haven't even really touched zoning, and we won't have time for that, I guess, Jeff. But as
good.
We wrap
zoning's
up,
very boring.
Well, but important. But as we wrap up, are people, you mentioned different stakeholders are now getting on board with this. Are people, as you go from city to city, more and more buying what you're selling about walkability?
I've been doing this for about 20, 25 years, and I've seen a very dramatic change in what was originally a minority opinion. And now I think most people want what we are advocating for. But, you know, there are a lot of people whose feeling about a downtown or whose relationship to their downtown is to zip in and zip out, and they don't really set foot on it while they're there. Maybe they drive through it to get somewhere else. And they're always, you know, if their focus is their own self-interest, they're always going to want driving speed more than they're going to want, you know, a great place. And we always say, you know, you have a choice. You can be a place that's easy to get through or a place that's worth arriving at. And one would hope that even the suburbanites among us would care enough about having a center worth admiring to make a little bit of a sacrifice in their vehicle speed to gain that benefit.
It's a good place to leave it. Jeff, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hey, it was my pleasure. Thanks for listening.
That's Jeff Speck, a city planner with Speck & Associates. He was with us to talk about his latest book. It's called Walkable City Rules, 101 Steps to Making Better Places. Still time for you to share your thoughts about walkability in your community. You can do that on Twitter. Tweet us at Central Time WPR, or let us know over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Can you walk around where you live? What would it take to get you out and walking in your community?